Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Welcome back. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on iHeart or RadioMD.com. And we have a wonderful guest on a subject that's really close to me because I believe in what he does. Muhammad Islami, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Dr. Islami,
yes,
who is a surgeon at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has a deep interest in carotid disease and in both preventing and treating ischemic strokes. So, Dr. Islami, let's talk about what is a stroke and what's the difference between ischemic and hemorrhagic and how common they are.
So a stroke is when a portion of the brain doesn't receive enough circulation and causes a stroke, which is basically a loss of the tissue of the brain. There are two causes for it.
So we're told look for FAST, which is facial weakness, arm weakness, speech, and time, I guess, getting quickly. But
right.
Does a stroke always cause one or more of those things? If you lose a part of the brain, you're always going to have something like that.
No, you can have very small minor symptoms such as difficulty visualizing through your eye. So the eye on one side, it looks like as if you're looking under the water, and it feels like a shade coming down in the on that side, and then it goes away. So it can be very minor like that. But it can be, of course, much, much more major, completely inability to speak or move your arm, move your legs, and what have you. So it can be any of those things. And it can be, again, very minor. It can be very, very major. It depends on how much of a tissue of the brain is injured.
Now, Dr. Islami, I interrupted you as we were about to talk about the difference between lack of blood flow due to occlusion or lack of blood flow in the artery versus a hemorrhage where blood flows out of the artery. So go ahead and talk about how common those two are.
So the lack of circulation to the brain that would cause ischemic stroke, that's about one-third of the strokes happens because of that. And majority of them are related to the carotid artery, narrowing of the carotid artery, which is one of the, there are four arteries that brings the blood flow to the head. Two of them are carotid arteries on the right and the left side of the neck. And then there are two other ones behind the neck. It's called vertebral arteries. So if you have disruption of the circulation to the head because of the occlusion of one of these arteries or a clot going from the artery to the head, you can have what's called ischemic stroke. If you have rupture
ischemic
of the...
ischemic means you don't have enough blood flow to that,
exactly,
to keep the tissues or the neurons, the brain cells, nourished.
Right. And, there are about 700,000 of these strokes happen every year. And as I said, a good portion of them are related to this ischemic stroke. And then other than that, the hemorrhagic stroke happens when there is a rupture of either an artery or the vein in the head. And then when that happens is that the pressure on the brain makes it not becomes ischemic because there's so much pressure on the brain parenchyma that it can't breathe, and then you have hemorrhagic stroke related to that. You can also have a hemorrhagic stroke which is a disruption of the artery that takes the blood to a portion of the head, and that can also, again, because of lack of circulation, you can have this aneurysm rupture or something like that in the head can cause hemorrhagic stroke. So those are the two basic type of the strokes.
And how common, you said that carotid stenosis, that is narrowing of the carotid artery in the neck was responsible for about a third of them, if I remember what you said.
Yeah.
How common is the hemorrhagic stroke?
So the hemorrhagic stroke is not as common as the ischemic stroke, usually it's related to a variety of different problems, such as aneurysm, AV malformation. You can have a trauma to the portion of the head that would cause a breakdown of the arteries in that segment and then cause hemorrhagic stroke through a pathway of basically pressure applied to the portion of the brain. Those are a little bit more difficult to kind of like prevent from happening.
And so that's a little less common. And what are the other roughly 55% of strokes due to?
So the hemorrhagic stroke is one. You can have a small vessel breakdown that can cause a stroke, and you can also have nerve irritations, you know, like inside of the parenchymal nerve irritation that can cause some sort of a stroke, which is a bit different than circulatory stroke.
And I suppose emboli from the heart are another cause.
Correct. But those are also part of the ischemic stroke that I was talking about. So anything that basically you can have an emboli or coming in from the heart, coming in from the thoracic aorta, coming in from the carotid artery, any of those things, they go into the artery and stop the flow in that segment, and they would cause ischemic stroke.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So those are basically a variation of the ischemic stroke. They can be caused by the carotid artery stenosis, or basically an embolization that would cause ischemia.
Now, one of the keys is how do you, we know that if you have a stroke, if you have these symptoms, you want to get to a hospital fast.
Right.
Why is that?
So they have this component of time in the fast thing that you just mentioned. Basically, there's a saying that the time is brain, and patients who have a stroke, they have to get to an institution that can start the treatment. And the treatment of a stroke in the acute setting requires involvement of the neurologist, neurointervention radiologist, that can start the patient on the protocols that they have for thrombolysis, which is medication to break down the clot. So they need to go very quickly. They need to be diagnosed. If it's ischemic, they can start doing the thrombolysis. If it's a hemorrhagic, then they need neurosurgeons to go ahead and evacuate the blood clots and whatnot. So the faster they can get, the less injury to the brain tissue, which would make the debilitation less as time goes by. So basically, you need to get to the hospital so they can restore the circulation and remove whatever the cause of this problem is.
And so the key is to get there quickly and to get someone to make a diagnosis of whether it's ischemic or hemorrhagic so it can be treated appropriately. Is
exactly.
that what I take? Is that correct?
Exactly.
And you're someone who treats these regularly. How do you treat them? What happens once they occur? Someone comes to the hospital, then what happens?
So usually the patient goes to a hospital. Usually they get a CAT scan. Usually they consult neurologists. And then hopefully is either preventing a stroke or preventing the second stroke from happening. That's where I get involved with it. So if they have a stroke, they obviously go to the hospital, neurologist, see them, they get a CAT scan. They usually get an ultrasound of the neck to make sure that there is no carotid artery narrowing. The CAT scan that they get usually It can be with or without contrast, depending on what the patient's symptoms are or how their presentation is. And a combination of those things make the patient go either admit to neurology, you know, observation, or admit to neurologist, do an intervention radiologist, or vascular surgeon, or a neurosurgeon dealing with the carotid artery narrowing.
Now, you're a vascular surgeon who deals with this narrow. Excuse me.
Sure.
Who deals with the narrowing? What do you do?
So we basically, there are two ways of dealing with it. When there is a narrowing that's significant, and significant is anything more than 60% based on an angiogram, or about 80% using an ultrasound, which is a simpler test. Angiogram also can be, I mean, just a standard angiogram or a CT angiogram, any of those, if the narrowing is more than 60, 70%, we start talking about getting it treated. If they have symptoms, of course, that's a different story. They definitely need to have this thing fixed.
Yeah, this is treated in advance.
Yeah.
So in other words, if they're 60% or more by angiogram or 80% or more by ultrasound narrowing, then they would call you in to treat it before the stroke occurred.
Exactly. And there are currently there are two ways of operating or fixing this. One is with basically making an incision and doing what's called carotid endarterectomy, which is basically we make an incision in front of the neck, find the artery and opening it up. And the way I describe it to the patients is that if you basically cut a cucumber and you take the seeds out, that's basically what we do. We basically make an incision on the artery, go inside and remove all the bad stuff in it and close it back together. The alternative to this is what's called angioplasty and stenting, which is basically we go either from the femoral artery or from the artery near the collarbone and get inside of the area that's narrowed and open it up with a balloon and a stent. There are some reasons that one is better than the other, but they're relatively similar to each other. But the standard of care right now is to do more carotid endarterectomy than stenting.
And do you ever go up and try and pull the clot back out? In other words, you say it. Sometimes you try and dissolve the clot.
Right.
Do you ever try and pull it out?
So that is usually done by a neurointervention radiologist. And what they do is that they, if they think that the patient comes in and acutely has clot that just went up, what they do is that they go from the artery in the groin area all the way up into the artery in the head and basically put this clot-busting medication. There is also a retrievable stent that that the neurointervention radiologist can open in the clot and basically pull it down. For a vascular surgeon, usually we don't necessarily operate in the very, very acute phase when they are having symptoms. The only time we do it is if they have a narrowing and it keeps causing symptoms. And when there's that's called crescendo TIA. That's the only time that we go and try to do the surgery on an emergent setting. So if you go in that kind of a setting and everything has, you know, everything was open and then we go in there, we obviously see there's clot and clot going all the way up to the artery in the head. Then we pass a special balloon and remove the clot. But if you need to do anything more than that, then you need to get your neurointervention radiology colleagues to do it.
So it is a team approach. We are talking with Dr. Eslami, Eslami, who is a cardiovascular surgeon, at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. He trained at Temple and then worked at the University of Massachusetts before being recruited to Pittsburgh. Now, Dr. Eslami, so you have a team, and we've got a question via email, which is, how important are the other doctors on the team? That is, how do you vet the doctors you get to work with?
Oh, they're significantly important. I mean, like I said, basically a situation that requires, you know, your emergency room physician being aggressive with diagnosing this, your neurologist being aggressive with making sure that patient neurologically, hemodynamically is stable and is on appropriate medication. You need your neurointervention radiologist being involved right away if they need to do any interventions. Vascular surgeons, cardiac surgeons, neurosurgeons, they all, you know, have to work together. You also need, a good ICU and everything else. So it's very, very important to have colleagues that can work toward the same goal, which is basically taking care of a patient who presents with a stroke.
Now, how much of this is done via what you would call screening tests? Someone looks and does an ultrasound of the carotid versus people have symptoms, small symptoms that go away in 24 to 72 hours.
Right. So a good majority of the cases, actually, if you look at some of the publications that people have done using a national inpatient sample database, it's not a very, very accurate database, but it gives a very good impression of what's going on across the country. And if you look at that, and I published and some other people published on that, you can see the majority of the cases are actually performed on the patients who do not have symptoms, which is a good thing because you pick up the symptoms beforehand. So usually what happens is that it can be something very simple as someone listening to a patient's neck, and they pick up what's called a bruit, which is basically the blood flow in the brain, in the artery becomes faster, and then you can hear a whistle sound like a bruit. And then when you hear that, then you start getting an ultrasound. Based on the ultrasound, you get a vascular specialist involved. And again, there are different specialists who deal with the carotid artery. And you get one of us involved, and we go ahead and talk to the patient and see how big is the narrowing and if they need to be operated on. So it's very, very important that just in the physical exam, sometimes you can pick these things up just by listening to the neck with a stethoscope. That's as simple as that. And then you can start by doing an ultrasound or other studies based on the protocol that people use for taking care of their patients.
We've been talking with Dr. Mohammed Eslami, ESLAMI, of the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. There's another email question, Dr. Eslami, and that is, if you have a small narrowing or a narrowing that is less than 60% of the neck, how often should you have your neck screened to see whether it's growing or not?
So usually we actually see the patients once a year. If it's, the categorization is usually 50 to 70%. So if they're in that category, we end up watching the patient, getting an ultrasound once a year or every 6 months, depending on patient's age and other comorbidities. But usually once a year, you just do an ultrasound and you can basically follow it. And then you also have to put the patients, consult them about, stopping smoking, taking blood pressure medication, taking medication to reduce the cholesterol levels, and also aspirin. Those are basically our initial treatment, and then we follow them in a year with another ultrasound.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Dr. Eslami about the carotid artery and ischemic or lack of blood flow strokes that occur when the brain is not getting enough blood flow due to an occlusion, due to a clot, due to an embolus, due to narrowing of the carotid artery. He's obviously an expert in repair of that. Dr. Eslami practices at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Eslami. You've been listening to the Owner's Manual Radio Show. This is podcast 45. We'll be back next week with outstanding information and great guests as well. Thanks for listening. You can download us every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. on Radio MD or from iHeart. And thanks to the 50,000 or more of you who download us every week. Please do rate us. And that's how we get great guests like Dr. Aswamy. Thanks again, Kevin, for great engineering. We'll be back next week.